This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
I don't smoke crack, I'm not a crack addict, I have no reason to resign. I don't smoke crack, I'm not a crack addict, has everybody lost their mind? Oh, I can't comment on a video I've never seen or does not exist. And no, who could have known so many years ago my life would end up being like this? And oh, I cannot comment on a video I've never seen or does not exist. There is no tape. There is no tape.
Anything else?
I did smoke crack, but not at this very moment. You didn't ask the question right. I must have smoked crack in one of my drunken stupors, and now I finally see the light. Oh, I'm not perfect, I've made mistakes, all I can do right now is apologize. I'd do absolutely anything to change the past, folks, I have nothing left to hide. I'm not perfect, I've made mistakes, I sincerely, sincerely apologize. I love my job, and I love this city.
Especially those Oriental people.
I don't smoke crack, I'm not a crack addict, I have no reason to resign. I don't smoke crack, hammered. If I'd stayed home, then we'd be fine.
We just heard The Ballad of Rob Ford, performed and posted on YouTube by Canadian internet personality, comedian, musician, and video producer Andrew Gennady. Andrew posts under the name Gunnarola. Gunnarola's song is one of a long list of online music videos on the topic of Toronto Mayor Rob Ford and the crack cocaine video scandal engulfing his office. Fresh from the reality TV spectacle of the Senate scandals, Canadians have been offered a new series, the Rob Ford Crack Cocaine Video Saga. But there haven't been resignations in shame or hasty retreats to spend more time with one's family. The response seems to be, nothing to see here, move on. Rob Ford, for example, has said, I have no reason to resign. His popularity, meanwhile, seems to actually have increased in an article at the TIE. Mitchell Anderson writes that Rob Ford isn't the only politician to indulge in what Anderson refers to as enabling bad behavior and codependent denial between politicians and the electorate. We're joined on the phone now by Mitchell Anderson.
Welcome to People First Radio, Mitchell.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
Mitch, your interview, this interview is happening one day after Toronto City Council voted overwhelmingly to encourage Rob Ford to step aside and get help for his problems. What do you think of yesterday's events?
Well, I mean, I'm dyed-in-the-wool political junkie, so it's good political fun. I mean, it's if you're a sports fan, it's like watching the Super Bowl, but I think as it reflects on democracy, it's terrible. Voter turnout has been steadily declining in Canada, particularly among young people, and I think it kind of plays into this progressive problem of people expecting less from government rather than more from government.
You wrote in your article at the TIE that Mayor Ford's puzzling popularity in the face of mounting scandal seems propelled by his cheapening of values that appeals to what you call a morally lazy electorate. Tell us more about that dynamic.
Well, it is this incredible conundrum. You have a mayor that has admitted smoking crack after he denied smoking crack. Even this morning, it's hard to keep up the latest scandal or apology coming from the mayor of Toronto. And at least when this story first kind of broke open again last week, a lot of people started to find that his popularity was actually going up. And, you know, I see it. I mean, it's sort of difficult to read. Like, why would people be kind of rallying behind someone like this? But, you know, I think you could make a case that if people see sort of a flawed character like Rob Ford in a high office, such as becoming mayor of Toronto, they could perhaps feel better about their own bad behavior, saying, well, he drives drunk. Well, so do I sometimes. Or, you know, he said bigoted or homophobic things in the past. And, you know, that I kind of see that reflected in the mayor of Toronto. So that kind of makes me feel better about who I am. You know, that's kind of a doomsday scenario for democracy. But, I mean, if that's the direction this is actually going in, I find it incredibly dangerous.
You've linked the current Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, into this cheapening of values dynamic as well. Tell us why that is.
Well, the last speech from the throne is a good example. I mean, he came off a huge Senate scandal that was simmering all summer, and people were really expecting to hopefully see some leadership from him in the fall. And what he rolled out was really sort of a shopping list of kind of goodies for consumers. A lot of it was focused around lowering cell phone rates or cable TV fees. And you know, this is not really inspired leadership. This is almost playing into this idea that, you know, the best thing government can do is get out of the way and make it easier for you to be a consumer. And I really think if you contrast that with, you know, what government was trying to do 40 years ago, like, you know, really trying to improve the state of the world, or Lester Pearson inventing peacekeeping, or some of the inspired leadership that, you know, has been shown by people like Pierre Trudeau or even Brian Mulroney when he took a principled stand against both apartheid and the U.S. military intervention in Central America. I mean, it's hard to believe that, you know, someone like Stephen Harper is making Brian Mulroney look good, but this is where we are right now.
You write also that the most affluent generation in human history feels justified in being outraged at having to pay taxes for services, and that many leaders keep getting elected and reelected, indulging what you describe as codependent denial. And I immediately think, Mitch, of American politics when I read that. Tell us more about that codependency and the spread of it in our political culture.
Well, I think the whole world was watching in horror and fear in the U.S. over the last couple of months when the Tea Party was basically hijacking the U.S. political process. And this is a small fringe right-wing group that, you know, is fringe within the Republican Party. And they had almost drank their own bathwater to the point where they believed that it was a desirable outcome for the U.S. to default on their debt, and somehow this was going to make the world a better place or lead to this transformative moment in the U.S. And I mean, that people would actually believe that that could improve the state of the world. It's crazy talk. But, you know, there's people almost kind of a celebrity avatars for their voters' stupidity, such as, you know, Ted Cruz or Michelle Bachmann, that are, you know, saying really outrageous things, and people are seeking them out to repeat, like, ever more outrageous things. And, you know, there's a sort of a personal agenda there. I mean, I'm speculating. But, you know, there is also a resonance within the American population that, you know, finally there's someone that agrees with who, you know, the views that I hold, whether they're informed or not. And, you know, we're going to cheer them on. And I think that it's almost like facts are decoupling from public decision making. And I find that very dangerous.
What are the implications of all this for our democracy going forward?
Well, you know, I keep hoping that we're going to reach sort of a tipping point where, you know, we have, you know, tried this on for size. We've had, you know, a series of sort of populist leaders that, you know, people might feel like reflect them personally. I mean, there was that old adage that, you know, well, you know, George Bush might not know very much, but he's the kind of guy you want to have a beer with. And I really am at a loss as to, you know, why that would be important in, you know, someone that you would elect to run your country. But if people sort of reach the point where they realize the limitations of, you know, just the likability of your leaders as opposed to their qualifications for the job, then, you know, hopefully we can kind of move beyond this really salacious and troubling time in democracy. I'm hoping. Here's hoping.
What do you think will happen next if we turn this back to the Rob Ford story? What's going to happen next in that ongoing saga?
Well, it's sort of fascinating what's playing out in Toronto right now because Rob Ford, I mean, you have to give him credit. He's on one level, very gifted politician. He, by municipal standards, kind of won a landslide in the last election, but his political vocabulary is pretty limited. I mean, there's a lot of bluster and bullying. He's very good at that with his brother, and I think there seems to be the showdown now with the rest of the city council. One of the things that I've been trying to promote to my colleagues in Toronto is to rethink the whole amalgamation of Toronto, which happened in 1998, which I think set the conditions for what's unfolding now. I think, here in the lower mainland of Vancouver, we have a very progressive mayor, and he's quite popular. And, outlying communities like Surrey, they have, a very popular mayor that's not quite as progressive, but that's fine. And I really think that, in order for local democracy to work, you have to have leaders that reflect the local public mood. And that's not the situation in Toronto. You have this kind of enormous block of voters that are all supposed to pick one leader, and unfortunately the surrounding suburbs will always outvote the downtown. And it's not just Rob Ford. Mel Aspin was mayor of Toronto for many years, and a lot of people felt that he wasn't perhaps the most reflective of the city, if you know what I mean.
You wrote a second article, in fact, called "While the Crack Pipes Hot De-Amalgamate Toronto," and you've got 10 points in there about why that would be good for Toronto. And one of them is it would hurt Harper. It would hurt the federal government. How would that link be changed if there was a de-amalgamation?
Well, I think back to like the days when Mike Harris amalgamated Toronto, and there was enormous public opposition to this. He basically forced a shotgun wedding on five municipalities, and all of which opposed it. There was a region-wide referendum that was, 3-1 against it. Four of the municipalities went to court to try and block it. But, 15 years later, here we are. I think there was some really sound, diabolical reasons for Mike Harris to do that, because what he really did was gerrymander an area that has an economy larger than six of Canada's provinces. And he correctly realized that if you linked five of those municipalities, they were probably going to elect right-wing populists. And, that's the kind of politics that Mike Harris was promoting. And when Rob Ford had sort of a victory barbecue in 2011, he invited both Jim Flaherty and Stephen Harper. And they both spoke glowingly about how Rob Ford had been sort of bringing this common sense revolution to Toronto, and how the so-called Ford Nation had endorsed Stephen Harper and helped him get elected. And, they were sort of linking this to hopefully electing a right-wing premier of Ontario as well. So, politics is a full contact sport, and people play to win. And I think there is a strategic reason that Mike Harris did this, and I really think this is an excellent opportunity to revisit that decision of 1998, which I think has been a disaster for Toronto. Toronto was a very progressive, interesting city, and that, we're sort of the laughingstock around the world, making front page news and on the BBC site. It's incredible.
I noticed as well, visiting that particular article that you wrote, which is called "Along with Ford, Canada's Political Leadership Hits Rock Bottom." It's at thetie.ca. I noticed, Mitch, that there are many, many comments at the bottom, and they're very lengthy, some of them. This has certainly created a lot of discussion.
Well, I hope so. This goes beyond Rob Ford. People are kind of focused on this because the news has a very short attention span. But, there is a really important comparison to be made between, for instance, Vancouver and Toronto. Gregor Robertson is committed to make, Vancouver the greenest city in the world by 2020. And, he's doing some quite progressive things. And I think he's easily going to get reelected next year. Some people have had fun kind of comparing Gregor Robertson to Rob Ford. And I think it's not that, politics works better in Vancouver than it does in Toronto. I think Vancouver would have similar problems if the lower mainland was forced to amalgamate against its will. And I think that rather than just focus on the latest scandal out of Rob Ford, which seems to be on happening on a very regular basis, we should be looking at some of the structural problems that led to this. And I obviously, there's a lot of brain power in Toronto, and people are very engaged in politics right now, and I think we might be barking up the wrong tree just thinking that our problems in Toronto are going to be solved by getting rid of Rob Ford.
Mitch Anderson, thank you very much for taking the time to join us. It was much appreciated.
Oh, real pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
Mitchell Anderson is a freelance writer based in Vancouver and a frequent contributor to the Taii. You can find his articles online at...
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.